Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the fourth case this morning, Parent versus Home Depot.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Attorney Brian Pagel, and I represent Timothy and Brenda Parent, the plaintiff's appellants in this matter. Wisconsin's Consumer Act, Chapters 421 to 427 of the Wisconsin Statutes, is perhaps the single most expansive consumer protection law in the country, federal or state. The parents brought their claims against Home Depot and now dismissed and settled co-defendant Citibank under Wisconsin's Consumer Act for that reason, because Wisconsin wants to provide more protection to any consumers under its ambit than any other jurisdiction does, including the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, including any other state. Judge Griesbach's decision in this matter on summary judgment improperly limits the reach and scope of Chapter 427 of the Wisconsin Statutes by deciding, based on Judge Griesbach's view of what the facts show, that Home Depot did not act either directly or indirectly as a debt collector in this matter and dismissing the case.
Mr. Pagel, I'm a little confused about this. This case is in federal court on diversity jurisdiction?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
It seems to be a dispute about $9,700.
It is a dispute about substantially more than $9,700.
How does it get above $75,000? Because only $9,700 on the charge account is what they're fighting about, isn't it?
No. What happened is the case began when Citibank, with the assistance of Home Depot, transferred a $9,700 charge, we allege improperly, to the parents' card.
Okay. So how do you get over to above $75,000?
I can get there. By the time the suit was filed, the charge was up to $21,000 and had drastically adversely affected Timothy and Brenda Parent's credit. So what was happening is because they were not paying on this card from 2005 on, the charges are mounting and Citibank is reporting this as delinquent credit on their credit.
$21,000.
Well, that's the charge that Home Depot is asserting that they are entitled to, or Citibank is asserting they're entitled to. But the $21,000 being reported as owed on their credit and the several years of delinquent payments adversely affected Timothy and Brenda Parent's personal credit rating, resulting in their being denied credit, resulting in their having additional costs of obtaining credit. And this was important because Mr. Parent is a self-employed trucker and was using credit to help run that. And in addition, added to the level of emotional distress. Now, under the Wisconsin Consumer Act, like the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, you don't just get your pecuniary losses and statutory damages. You get compensation for emotional distress even without proof of physical pain or suffering. Mr. Parent testified via affidavit that, in particular, the ongoing stress of being asserted that he owed $21,000, of being denied credit, of having this credit on his record and of trying to obtain credit to run his business as well as continue in his daily affairs, dramatically affected his physical health and emotional well-being. He testified that he withdrew from social events, and that was backed up by other witnesses. He testified that he had difficulties emotionally speaking. All of that is compensatory under the Wisconsin Consumer Act. Now, a unique provision of the Wisconsin Consumer Act is that your statutory damages are measured by one of two factors. There is either a doubling of the finance charge up to a maximum of $1,000 or a matching of compensatory damages. And so what you have here is the parents are alleging that they are owed much more than $75,000 in compensatory damages. If successful, they will be awarded their actual compensatory damages exceeding $75,000, as well as statutory damages, which would double those. As Judge Griesbach said at one earlier motion, this is a doubler. So under the Wisconsin Consumer Act penalty provisions, a person gets double their actual damages when the actual damages exceed the statutory penalty of $1,000. So by that standard, whether a jury would award that amount, we think they will when you reverse this, we do exceed the $75,000. Although I should note, the parents did not file this in federal court. It was removed, I believe, by Citibank. I joined the case after removal, so I'm a little unclear on who removed it. But with that said, that's a good introduction because the level of damages that the parents suffered shows, I think, why this case deserved to be tried by a jury and why Judge Griesbach, improperly and perhaps because of some discomfort with the broad scope of the Wisconsin Consumer Act, limited how the Wisconsin Consumer Act applies. When you read Chapter 427, and in particular the claims with respect to rights that don't exist, Chapter 427 does not limit itself the way, say, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act does to those taking direct action. And we have extensively briefed and relied extensively on the Patska versus Viterbo case decided by Judge Crabb in the Western District of Wisconsin because, frankly, Judge Crabb got it right. In Patska versus Viterbo, just to briefly recap, Viterbo College hires a collection agency that goes out after a debtor, charges improper interest rates. The debtor pays money, which may or may not have been applied to improper interest that wasn't allowed to be charged. And Patska then, the debtor, sues Viterbo College. And Judge Crabb holds that even though Viterbo College took no direct action, Viterbo College did nothing other than hire this collector, the Wisconsin Consumer Act reaches Viterbo College because Viterbo College acted indirectly. And that is the exact wording of the Wisconsin Consumer Act, that you are a debt collector if you act directly or indirectly to help someone claim money that's owed. So when you look at, first of all, what Home Depot did directly, Judge Griesbach's ruling was initially that the parents provided no evidence that Home Depot took direct action. We have, I think, reams of evidence that Home Depot took direct action. And it begins with what we refer to as the 20-page facts. And if there was a smoking gun in this case, the 20-page facts is the smoking gun. The inception of these charges are when Lee Cranville, a disgruntled dentist who no longer wants to be building log cabins, marches into Home Depot and says, I don't want to pay this $9,700 charge on my card. And following Lee Cranville's dispute, a fax is sent from Home Depot to Citibank, 20 pages of materials related to the Cranville purchase. And that fax indisputably goes from Home Depot to Citibank. Citibank provides credit services for Home Depot, and Citibank helps make sure that Home Depot gets paid. Handwritten on that fax is Brenda Parent's credit card number. Now, the evidence in this case shows that that credit card number is not available to anyone at Citibank. It's not available to anyone outside of Home Depot. Home Depot will not say in its investigation how that handwritten credit card number got on there.
But isn't the card with Citibank?
The card is with Citibank, but
a person...
So the number
is available to Citibank.
Well, a person looking up a number at Citibank cannot look up another account number. There's protections in place at Citibank. So when Lee Cranville disputes a charge, Citibank does not have the ability to look up someone else's number. They can look at Lee Cranville's account. That's undisputed. So the Citibank employee who moves this charge from the Cranville account to Brenda Parent's personal account has to have Brenda Parent's number from someone else. And that number comes from the handwritten notation on the fax that indisputably went from Home Depot to Citibank. That's the beginning of the case. But Home Depot doesn't stop there. That's a point-of-sale report that only Home Depot can get, with a number that Home Depot can only get access to. But then when Citibank investigates this dispute, when Citibank is dealing with this, Citibank says to Home Depot, give us some evidence that Brenda Parent is responsible for this charge. And Home Depot, now Home Depot's defense in this, their ultimate defense is, we were paid years ago. We don't have a dog in this fight, I think, to quote my esteemed opposing counsel. But Home Depot wants to keep that money, and Home Depot wants to keep Citibank happy. So it doesn't matter where the money ultimately resides. It matters that they're trying to get Brenda Parent to pay this money. So when Citibank says, we're not sure Brenda Parent owes this money, Home Depot, give us some proof, Home Depot faxes up a customer delivery receipt. And when Citibank asks what this is, Home Depot lies. Home Depot says that customer delivery receipt shows that Tim Parent agreed to be responsible for these charges. Well, we deposed the people who work at Home Depot. And we asked the people who work at Home Depot, what does that customer delivery receipt say to you? And they said, it's the person who signs for the delivery at the time that it's dropped off. And we asked them, does that indicate to Home Depot that that person is agreeing to pay for it? And the answer was no. Had I been there that day, had one of the justices been there that day and signed for that delivery, they would not be agreeing to pay for Lee Cranville's cabin package. They were agreeing that they had received at that spot packages. So Home Depot continues their process by lying to Citibank and telling Citibank this guarantees that Tim Parent, in fact, agreed to pay for these charges. Now, that's important to Citibank because Citibank doesn't want to charge Tim Parent if he didn't agree to pay for it and doesn't want to charge Brenda Parent. Why? Because Citibank will get sued for that. Home Depot makes things worse. Tim and Brenda Parent continually called Home Depot and called Citibank. Now, Home Depot says Citibank acts on its own. When you call Citibank, Citibank refers these cases to Home Depot. When you call Citibank, you get the phone answered with Home Depot Credit Services. When you get a bill from Citibank, it says Home Depot and invites you to pay at Home Depot. So Home Depot is far more involved than they would have you believe. And in this particular case, in addition to the 20-page fax, in addition to lying about the customer delivery receipt, Home Depot lied directly to Tim Parent. When Tim Parent called up and said, "What is this charge?" And he did it not once, not twice, but three times. Home Depot lied to him each time. They told him it's a misapplied sale. They told him it was a sale that was canceled. They told him it was a never charged, never paid sale, and that would be taken off his account. And it never was taken off his account. And then later on, Home Depot backs up Citibank and says, "Well, they've waited too long. You can't dispute the charge now. Tell them to deny it." So Home Depot is directly lying to Tim and Brenda Parent to keep them from taking this case further against Citibank. Why? Because they want Citibank to get paid, and they want to keep their money.
Did both Tim and Brenda have their separate cards?
The card was issued only under Brenda Parent's name. Tim Parent was allowed to use it from time to time.
I mean, that was part of the issuance of the card, that he was a secondary user?
I'm not 100% sure on whether Tim Parent agreed to be an obligor on the account, but he was authorized by Brenda Parent to use her account. And Home Depot never had an issue with Tim Parent making charges on the account. The charge in question, though, was never made by either Tim or Brenda Parent. Tim did make a related charge around that time, not related, I shouldn't say, a similar charge around that time when he charged another cabin package to Hold On Spec. Home Depot, though, beyond their direct involvement, Home Depot has indirect involvement as well. And that much is apparent, and that is where this case falls squarely in with the Patska versus Viterbo College. Because even if Home Depot never did anything, even if Home Depot, when questioned by Citibank, when questioned by the parents, said, "We're out of this, talk to Citibank," there is no doubt that Citibank is trying to collect money and that Citibank paid Home Depot. We have a great deal of questions about whether Home Depot offered any kind of admissible evidence in this case, but the one thing we don't dispute is that Home Depot was going to end up with this $9,700, and in fact, they allege that they have. So Home Depot is always getting paid. Home Depot is Viterbo College. Home Depot is clearly a merchant under the Wisconsin Consumer Act. They engage in transactions routinely that end up in consumer transactions. They are a merchant, and they have Citibank out there sending out these billing statements saying, "Pay us." Now, it's true. Citibank gets paid as well. Citibank makes interest. But when a $9,700 charge is placed on the Home Depot card, that $9,700 doesn't go to Citibank. That $9,700 goes to Home Depot. Citibank makes money off the interest and service fees it makes. So ultimately, all of Citibank's efforts are designed to get Home Depot $9,700 and some dollars in this case. And that makes them nothing other than a debt collector and makes Home Depot liable indirectly under the Wisconsin Consumer Act. Home Depot's defense of "we didn't really do anything" doesn't fly in this case because, as Judge Crabb said in Patska, they can protect themselves through the direction of their agent. They could tell Citibank, "You don't have to collect these charges unless you're authorized for them." They could protect themselves via a contract that they have in this action. I see I'm running into my rebuttal time. So they could protect themselves via a contract in this action and say, "Citibank, if you do something unauthorized, you indemnify us for yourself." So Home Depot's suggestion that when Judge Griesbach says, "Well, you could hold the U.S. Post Office liable under these claims," that's a straw man. That's a non-starter of an argument because Home Depot can set up its liability with Citibank. What Wisconsin has said is, "Home Depot, we're going to impose a liability on you as between the parents and a merchant like Home Depot." Wisconsin says, "Home Depot, you're going to bear the brunt of this." Judge Griesbach's decision runs squarely counter to that legislative intent. If there's no further questions, I'll reserve
have a question. You mentioned that the compensation that Citibank got was fees and something else. That money never went to them and went to Home Depot?
The $9,700 for the cabin package that Lee Cranville purchased if you take Home Depot at their word, was paid to Home Depot. So when Citibank extends credit, Home Depot delivers the cabin package, and at some point in that process, Citibank pays Home Depot the $9,700 for the cabin package. Citibank then charges interest and fees on their accounts, and that's how Citibank makes their money. So Citibank is adding some to the top and skimming the frosting off, if you will. Home Depot gets the meat. Thank you.
Mr. Conrad?
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Christopher Conrad, and I represent the defendant appellee Home Depot in this action before you today. I had planned on discussing some of the aspects of why the circuit court determined both on a motion for summary judgment and on a motion for reconsideration why there were no facts justifying any claim. But based upon some of the argument that occurred here today, I think there are a couple of things that need to be cleared up first. First of all, let's be very certain about one thing here. The credit card involved is a Citibank credit card. The record is replete with references, including admissions by Citibank at R55-2 in the record, that this is a Citibank credit card issued to the plaintiffs by Citibank pursuant to a cardholder agreement. It is not a Home Depot credit card, although it does bear the Home Depot name on that card. Let's also be clear in that it is Citibank that has admitted, again, at record citation 55-2, that it is Citibank who owns this charge account, who administers this charge account, who sends out all of the notices of deficiency, who reports parties to credit reporting bureaus, and who takes all of the efforts to recover the debt that is incurred on the Citibank credit card.
Can the card be used only at Home Depot?
The card is authorized only for use at Home Depot, much like, for example, a Best Buy credit card would be administered by a national bank, such as Capital One or Chase or even Citibank, but it is used, it is branded and used at that particular merchant.
And the user of it, the cardholder, gets a discount on Home Depot items because of that?
There are various incentives. The incentive in this case was 0% financing for a term. So you charge materials on your Home Depot credit card, you use it, and then you go ahead and pay it later with incurring zero interest on that.
Is Mr. Pagel correct on the jurisdictional amount here?
I hesitate to get into the jurisdictional amount because of discussions that took place in the trial court in the scheduling and the formatting of this. When this case was initially presented, we had motions to dismiss before the trial court, and I think it was 6 or 7 of the 10 claims were dismissed. Subsequent to that, we had a scheduling conference where the trial court said, let's put elements of damage aside and address the merits of the defense, and that's how we find ourselves in the position that we are. The root charge is $9,700. There are claims on top of that for unspecified personal injuries and other damages that have not been addressed or developed due to the limitations initially imposed by the trial court.
And some of those dismissed claims were pending when you removed the case?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And so so I can't honestly stand before you today and say I know the value of what they are seeking. I know the value of the charge that's in dispute here, and I know that that's a charge that nobody has ever paid. But to give you a firm jurisdictional argument, I'm afraid I'm simply unable to do that here today. We're also faced now with a situation where we've already addressed who owns this charge account, and now we're facing essentially an unlimited attempt to expand the Wisconsin Consumer Act, which is broad enough already. And I hesitate to get into superlatives and try to blow things out of proportion when we talk about slippery slope type arguments, but that's really what we're looking at here. We're looking at someone who says that any merchant that has anything to do with an action that later results in a debt collection is now going to be subject to the provisions of the Wisconsin Consumer Act, no matter what relationship or control they had over the person who is doing the debt collection. Now, plaintiffs rely heavily upon the Patska case. The Patska case is the only decision issued in the state of Wisconsin that addresses kind of the confines or the extent of the Wisconsin Consumer Act. And in Patska, I think it's very important that we take a look at what actually occurred. You have a university who is pursuing a student for overdue tuition, book, meal, and other associated college fees. They make collection attempts for a certain period of time, some successful, mostly not. They then turn over the collection to a designated agent for collection, someone whose business is collecting debt, that is security credit. Security credit then goes out and starts sending letter after letter to the debtor. They collect over 60 payments from the debtor. They send various payment demands. They tell the debtor, you better go ahead and consult an attorney because we're going to sue you. They go ahead and refuse to give the plaintiff an accounting of the debt when she asks for it. And then they try to collect what is determined to be an illegal collection fee that is added on to the core of the debt already owned. And based upon those facts, Judge Crabb said, under public policy grounds, okay, I'm now going to call this the university's agent, because throughout this entire process of what Security Credit was doing, Security Credit is in contact with the college and advising them as to what's going on. In this case, let's look at why the district court did what it did. There is not one piece of evidence showing Home Depot sent something to the plaintiffs to try to collect the debt. Did Home Depot send information to Citibank? Yes. By the way, we dispute the whole credit card number being written on the charge. That there is absolutely not 1% of evidence that shows that the number was on the fax when it left Home Depot. We don't know where the number came from, but it didn't come from Home Depot pursuant to the record. So now we've got a situation.
How does it go on the record? You mean somebody said that when it left it didn't have anything on there? Or?
No, the record shows that there was a fax that was sent from Home Depot to Citibank. There are photocopies afterwards of that fax, but that fax now has a credit card number on it. All of the Home Depot employees who had contact with these transactions were deposed. All of them denied that that was their handwriting on the fax. None of them, and all of them denied writing that on there themselves. So there's no indication in the record that while Home Depot sent the fax, they sent the fax with the credit card number on it. But even if they did, Your Honor, even if Home Depot had put the credit card number on there, look at what the statute says. The statutory sections upon which Home Depot is being sued require Home Depot to take some action in furtherance of the collection of a debt. This fax took place on October 5. The debt wasn't placed on the plaintiff's account until October 14. So somehow Home Depot is supposed to be trying to collect the debt by putting this credit card number down that at the time didn't even exist with respect to the plaintiffs. So factually, I don't think you can make that connection. Secondly, what does the credit card number have to do with an attempt to collect the debt? The credit card number is being sent by Home Depot to Citibank, who, as the justice noted, issued the account to begin with. The idea that Citibank somehow can't make a determination as to who owes on the account, frankly, is implausible. And when you look at the documentation provided in the record, particularly the attachments to the Elizabeth Barnett affidavit, as it's also in there under Record Citation 55, I think it's in the page of the hundreds, there's a letter from the vice president and the general counsel of Citibank to the parents in 2009. And he says to the parents, hey, wait, we looked at this situation. And we saw that on all of the order documents, your name appears, and we saw that when this order was filled, your name also appears. And then subsequently, we come to find out that what you order were these log cabin materials, and these log cabin materials are incorporated into a cabin that you built and that you sold to somebody else, and so you got the benefit of all of these materials. And that vice president and general counsel of Citibank tells the parents, hey, from our view of this, under our understanding of the federal credit laws, we're entitled to take the action that we did because you were the one who got the benefit of the goods that were ordered. So there's nothing in that that shows Home Depot's involvement in making the determination. And in fact, when you look at the Barnett affidavit, see, she denies that Home Depot had any input into the determination. And why would they? It's Citibank's account. So when we look at what plaintiffs are trying to do here, they are trying to equate Home Depot, who never sent a collection notice to the plaintiffs, who never sent them any calculation of interest, who never requested from them that they pay a debt, who never threatened to turn them over to any credit reporting agency, and who never took any act whatsoever to try to get the plaintiffs to pay them the money that Citibank claims is owed under the ambit of the Wisconsin Consumer Act. Plaintiffs have taken the PATSCA case where a party is specifically contracted to do all those things and did all those things in violation of various laws, and the court then finding under public policy grounds, we're going to declare them the agent of the debt holder, and they're trying to extend that over to Home Depot, who, if you look at the record, and the record that was developed by the district court shows time and again, opportunities were provided to the plaintiffs to demonstrate that Home Depot undertook some of the actions of which they were accused, and no fact is ever presented. At some point, when we're looking at the allegations, we have to go to the amended complaint. The amended complaint at Record Citation 17 claims that Home Depot tried to collect from the plaintiffs a debt they knew they did not have. There is not a fact in evidence that shows that Home Depot tried to collect the debt. The allegations claim that Home Depot tried to threaten the plaintiffs to report them to some type of credit reporting agency if they didn't pay. There is no fact in the record that shows that Home Depot ever had any such communications with the plaintiffs whatsoever. What we have is a situation where the plaintiffs had something going on. They had something going on with Mr. Cranbuehl, and they had something going on with Citibank. And you have Home Depot, who's now caught in the middle. And when the parties ask Citibank, hey, give us the documentation about what's going on here, Citibank complied. That's providing information. The Wisconsin Consumer Act requires a defendant, if they're going to be found liable, to take actions in furtherance of the pursuit of a debt. That is the distinction that the plaintiffs were never able to overcome. That is why the district court granted summary judgment. That is why the district court upheld its summary judgment ruling on a motion for reconsideration. And the facts justifying that violation, Home Depot's actions to correct a debt, to collect a debt, is why this court should uphold those two district court rulings and uphold the grant of summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We have 1 minute.
Home Depot says that they deny putting a credit card number on there. Home Depot says the parents' claims are implausible. Home Depot says we dispute those claims. That's why a jury trial is necessary. Juries decide plausibility. Juries decide disputed facts. juries decide when a fax goes from Home Depot to Citibank and ends up with a handwritten credit card number on it, who put that credit card number there, even if Home Depot denies it, because there is an inference available that Home Depot put that credit card number there. In the Patska case, Judge Crabb said it best, as a matter of public policy, holding creditors liable for the acts of collection agencies they utilize on a regular basis advances the purposes of the Fair Debt Collection Statutes, which are to protect consumers from abusive, unfair, or unconscionable collection practices. The Wisconsin legislature has said Chapter 427, under which the parents filed their claims, applies to conduct and practices in connection with the collection of obligations arising from consumer transactions. The law is broad enough to reach the parents' claims. We ask you to reverse the decision and send it back for a trial. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.